Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to this episode of All Things Policy. There's been a lot of conversation about the winners and losers of the COVID-19 pandemic, probably the list of losers far outscoring the number of winners. However, there's a couple of sectors that generally seem to be net gainers in this pandemic. And in today's episode, I think we will combine the two. One of them is online education and the other is the telecom sector. So I have with me today two students of our online postgraduate program in public policy, Shruti Badri. Hi, Shruti.
Hi.
And Kaushal Oza. Hi, Kaushal.
Hey, Anupam.
Hi. And so what we're going to do today is talk about the telecom sector, which is generally seen as to be the other big winner. Obviously, with people not working in offices, but rather staying at home and working from home means that they require internet connections, they require mobile connection phones to communicate with each other. There also is increased kind of demand for entertainment, and therefore there's higher usage of telephones for that. And so today what we're going to do is look at some of those things and also generally look at an overview of the telecom sector, the health kind of status of the telecom sector in India. Is it, you know, a highly competitive marketplace? Is it not competitive? How did we get here? And what does it actually mean for the consumers? So to do all of this, I have two of our brilliant students, Shruti and Kaushal. And so let's just get started. So let's start with the current situation right now and see how has COVID actually impacted the telecom sector? What has been their sort of response in all of this? How have they reacted? Are they really winning as much as we imagine them to be? To do this, Shruti, can you start off?
Sure. So as you said, Anupam, usage has shot up globally, and in India it's increased at twice the rate that it has globally. So on average, people are using data for 2 hours more every day. Also, telecom stocks have done pretty well. The overall market has been down 20%, but Airtel, Vodafone are both up during this time. That's what I have to say.
Yes, and also I think one interesting point there is that only 2-3% of the internet usage during the lockdown has been through broadband. Most of it has been wireless usage. So we are using and consuming a lot of data.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's also pretty much on expected lines. The interesting thing is that India's increase has been double the global average. That's interesting in its own set of ways, and probably the different kinds of conclusions that you can come to from that. Probably the, you know, some parts of the world were already using a lot of data and therefore the increase is not as much. In India, probably, you know, there's a huge spike. We don't know really. We need, you know, further data to kind of draw meaningful conclusions about this. But I think this by itself is interesting. And one of the, I mean, big kind of takeaways that we were thinking of just, you know, when we were speaking about this is that to truly take advantage of something like this, to change the way that, you know, people worked and communicated, etc., you needed a really healthy telecom sector, right? That was going to be, you know, an essential kind of precondition. If you didn't have good enough, let's say, mobile penetration, if you didn't have good enough telecom, availability in whole parts of India, then at a time when you were forcefully confined to your houses, you would suddenly find yourself lost out. So let's spend the next few minutes on just this aspect about the health of the telecom sector. And one of the, you know, the standard kind of ways to do that is look at how many players there are in the market and how competitive it is. And it's kind of interesting to, you know, look at the number of players. If I remember early, you know, in about 2007-8 or something like that, and Shruti will correct me, there were about, you know, 15 players at one point of time. And now you have 3 players. So Shruti, can you take us through what happened there in the telecom sector?
So before Reliance launched Jio in September 2016, we had 9 players in the telecom market. Now 4 years later, there are only 3 others except Jio. At that time, we used something called an HHI index. So this is a more subtle way of calculating how concentrated a market is, besides just counting the number of players. And we find that at that time, it was only moderately concentrated with those nine players. After Jio launched and they publicly began this price war, prices went down to around a tenth of the existing price. Everybody else had to either cut prices or go out of business. There were a bunch of mergers, a bunch of exits from the market, and that left the market with just Airtel, Vodafone, Jio, and BSNL, the government-operated service.
Right, so let's talk about this HHI a little bit more. So firstly, what does it stand for the benefit of our listeners?
Yeah, HHI is the Herfindahl-Hirschmann Index, which is the measure of the size of the firm in relations to the industry. So to really boil it down, it measures the competitiveness that is in the industry.
So give me a sense of the numbers. What is the HHI today as against HHI in 2014 as, or 2015, let's say, Shruti, when you were saying pre-launch of Jio. So how do those numbers compare?
Yeah, so pre-Jio, it was 1540. Post-Jio, it's 2770. So according to the our threshold, so the government of India's thresholds, anything above 2000 is highly concentrated. The US government, which is a little more lenient, is 2500. So by any measure, the market now is highly concentrated.
Right. So if you have an industry, let's say at, with an HHI of 1000, it means that there are, one, a lot of players, and two, none of those players are big enough to essentially, dictate market terms, as we call it, and that there is a healthy kind of competition between them. Whereas the higher you go, if it is 2000, then it automatically means that it's a lot more concentrated. So it's just about number of players, but what is the kind of market share of these different players, correct? And then if the number is something as 2700 odd, it means it's highly concentrated. So it means in practical terms, it means that probably there are just about two or three really big players who completely command the kind of dominance in the market. Is that correct? And you're saying that the telecom sector has actually worsened. So it's not just, you look at the HHI in a moment of time, as to what it is today, but you kind of see it over a period of time to give you a sense of whether things are improving or whether things are getting worse in any particular sector. And if you look at this kind of historical trend in the telecom sector, you'd find that, and Shruti, you mentioned this in your paper, you'd find that, pre-2002, 2003, the HHI was again kind of high because there were not enough players. BSNL was probably the really big kind of player in the market. Market was not, it was highly regulated. It was a tough place to be in, and therefore you didn't have as many private players in the market, right? And then I think they kind of liberalized many aspects of the telecom sector. They allowed, they deregulated it. They allowed for private players to come in. They even increased the FDI kind of holdings of private players in the sector, and you suddenly saw this big spurt. You had many players. I don't know how many of our listeners remember, you had this whole set of regional players also coming about, and multiple players, and that's what, at one point of time, we had about 15 players, and also the market therefore getting kind of less concentrated, and that's when you saw this the HHI figure coming down to about even 1200s, 1400s, even 1500s, and so on. And then you see the sudden spike in 2016. Jio comes in, all of these smaller players are unable to kind of cope up. Again, the government of India also does a couple of stupid things. We'll talk about that later. And then you suddenly see a spike in concentration again.
Just to jump in, and not only when we talk about these smaller players, it was pretty evenly distributed in that seven players had above 5% market share this time. So it's not that they were these hyper-local regional players. You had seven having above 5% means that there was really, I guess that's another...
Yeah, that's an extremely good indicator. Yeah. The fact that you have, that's nearly 35% market share, which is very evenly distributed. That also is a very good indicator of this. Speaking about, regional players and so on, anyone who knows the telecom industry would probably recognize that, you have all of these weird circles and you have, almost state-wise different kind of the way that the market is. It's not one global kind of market, which is India. But you know, within India, there are multiple markets. And not all of the markets look or, is in a similar shape, right? Kaushal, can you take us through that kind of regional variation in all of this?
Yes, absolutely. So by about 2012, like you mentioned, in 2004, the situation was very bad. The HHI for each of the circles is about 4,000, 5,000. In Jammu and Kashmir, it's even 10,000. So let's look at Bombay, 2012. Okay, the HHI then is about 1,200. Once Jio enters in about 2018, the HHI shoots up and goes to about 2,000. Now, this is true almost for every circle. So if you look at Maharashtra as a whole, it's about 1,500. And then Jio comes in and again, it shoots up around about 2,000. Madhya Pradesh, West Bengal, Himachal, they suffer the most actually out of this because their HHI actually goes up to around 2,500 or thereabouts. So there is, you can see a lot of concentration happening, players dropping out, mergers, acquisition, all of that is actually not bad, you know, I mean, because mergers and acquisition will bring in some kind of efficiency, but about 2,500 means that there are really, really very few choices right. For the customers.
That's kind of really interesting. I mean, but before we go on to what that means, Kaushal, is there any particular state, or region that really stands out now? Okay, let me put it this way. Is there any region that is doing better than the others in terms of market concentration? If so, what would it be? Or is it just small variations between the states?
Nothing which is remarkable. There is this one circle, UP East, which is doing pretty all right. As far as the HHI is concerned, it's below 1,700. But apart from that, all other circles are actually highly, okay, highly concentrated.
And we don't know what's going on in UP East, do we?
No, but I should point out that this is sort of consolidated data for wireless and wireline. So there is obviously this competitiveness might be there because of the wireline data. And once you begin to eliminate those numbers, then you might see a very high concentration for mobile phones in UP East as well. So pan-India, we are not doing well.
This is a remarkable thing which you wouldn't really expect in normal circumstances, where you're talking about one player entering the market and if there is any additional players in the market, one would naturally assume that it is going to have a positive effect on this concentration of market power, as in that it's going to become less concentrated, right? Obviously, because one new person is entering, but this doesn't seem to be the case with the telecom industry. Once Jio entered, as we have seen throughout this conversation, with the introduction of a new player, you are in this unique situation where it's become more concentrated. So what happened there, Kaushal? I mean, what is so special about this particular incident of, one player, which is Reliance Jio entering? I mean, we know the geopolitics of Reliance and some bits of it, which we probably even do not dare say, but we understand that. But what happened particularly in the telecom sector?
So in two words, short story, regulatory capture. But I'll actually play out that story for you. So Reliance entered with 4G, right? Jio entered with 4G. Now for Jio to have bought 4G spectrum, two things should have happened. The government should have auctioned or sold 4G spectrum, and Jio should have either won the auction or bought the 4G spectrum. None of this actually happened. What happened is in 2010, the government auctioned broadband and wireless access spectrum, which is not 4G spectrum. And there is this company called Infotel, which is in itself very interesting, okay, because it has this interesting history of promoters with whose family ties with one degree of separation. You can trace back to the Ketan Mehta scam and the Sukhram scam in telecom. But more interestingly, this company has a subscriber base. Now, all the other competitors have a subscriber base minimum of 35 million. This company has a subscriber base of one.
One individual, one single entity.
One single person is subscribing to it. So not even all the employees are subscribing to it. So yeah. So they have a subscriber base of one. Their total value, lock, stock and smoking hot barrel, is about 2.4 crores. And they bid for this broadband and wireless access spectrum, and they bid 5,000 times over their value.
So they really care about that one single customer of theirs.
Absolutely. So it's like saying, you know, if I have 1 lakh rupees, the government trusts me enough to carry out a contract of 50 crore rupees, right? So after this happens, so where does Jio come in? Jio comes in now. And Jio buys this company within 24 hours after it has won the broadband and wireless access spectrum. Now suddenly alarm bells, etc. go up. And the CAG actually writes a report asking the DoT to cancel the broadband spectrum that has been acquired now by Reliance Jio, de facto. Yeah, I quote the report. Quote, the DoT failed to recognize the telltale sign of rigging of the auction right from the beginning of it, end quote. So now that the CAG has alerted TRAI and DoT, what does the DoT do? Of course, I mean, it acts on it, right? Except that it doesn't. What it does is TRAI recommends letting company with internet-only license, which is what Reliance Jio has at this point, to unified access license, which means it can become a full-blown from a broadband company, it can become a full-blown mobile company. And the DoT agrees. So Reliance pays about 1,700 crores, and acquires this 4G
that
spectrum.
That is license. Amazing. Here I thought we were doing a boring episode on the telecom sector. But what it has turned out is a story of political intrigue. And what happens after that?
Yeah, so there is a sequel to this, right? Okay, so now you think Reliance are the clear winners of this story, except that they are not, because they have not accounted for this one thing called as interconnect usage charge. Okay, now bear this in mind. Jio has promised free voice calls, right? Free outgoing calls to for life. Okay, so there's this thing called as internet usage charge, which means that if I call you, Anupam, and we both are on different networks, then my network pays a charge to your network to use the infrastructure that makes my outgoing call possible, right? So normally it's not a big deal. You know, there's an interconnect usage charge paid, and mostly the prices are more or less competitive, and it's not a big deal. Everyone sort of, it evens out over a period of time, so it's not a big deal in the telecom sector. So here is what happens now. Vodafone, Idea, Airtel all have some 60% incoming and 40% outgoing. Jio, because it is giving away free calls, has 90% outgoing, only 10%
incoming. I love this.
So it has to now start paying money, right? So it has to now start paying money, right, to Vodafone and Airtel, right? So this is 14 paise per minute that it has to pay. So it has to sort, now they have
get
to
get that revenue from somewhere.
Vodafone and Airtel. Yeah. Vodafone and Airtel are getting about 4,000 crores from Jio, right? Except that now TRAI swoops in and says, TRAI swoops in and says that the 14 paise is no longer the rate. The rate is now only 6 paise per minute.
So they're doing price fixing in order to help one player.
Absolutely. And they say that in 2020, we want to remove this interconnect user charge altogether. So remember, earlier this year, there was this controversy a few months back. There was this controversy about Jio beginning to charge for outgoing calls to other network. So basically, it was this. TRAI did not do away with the IUC. So Jio, which had promised when the IUC was 14 paise per minute, that it will provide free outgoing calls to all its customer. When the IUC came down to 6 paise per minute, they said that TRAI is not keeping its word of finally taking away all IUC charges, and therefore will begin to charge our customers.
Okay. That's where we are at this point of time. And of course, the government has at various points come in with, and you know, I mean, other players have suffered because of, you know, non-Jio related stuff as well, which is, you know, the dues, etc. I mean, the Supreme Court as well has done some decisions which might not be the best for the industry. I mean, let's leave it at that. So we understood how Jio came in and how Jio kind of conquered in a way the market. And of course, because they got the spectrum for as cheap as what Kaushal was talking about, and then which is why they could give away, you know, free voice calls, which is essentially completely undercutting the market, correct? I mean, as it is, I think even before Reliance came in, before Jio came in, the average, I think, call rate in India was still one of the lowest in the world. And once they stepped in, I think it just completely changed the game. I mean, as of now, I'm pretty sure that the average consumer in India pays a telephone bill, which is like a minuscule percentage of what anyone else anywhere in the world would pay. And thanks to a lot of things. I mean, one, there was at one point healthy competition. Two, of course, Jio came in and did this, and therefore, you know, average prices have gone down, etc. Now, let's just look at that, particularly look at that. We'd always look at, you know, concentration, forget about how Jio entered, etc. But it did, it undercut players. A lot of players couldn't, you know, survive this kind of competition that Jio was throwing at them. There was a lot of exits. There was a lot of mergers and acquisitions. There was consolidation of market power. We know all of this, right? Idea and Vodafone merged. You had, you know, Docomo exited. Someone else was taken over by someone else, etc., etc. Let's not go too much into the detail of all of that. But because of that, you had this, you know, higher concentration. I mean, the HHI, as we have been speaking about, went from 1700 to whatever, 2700. So that tells you that the market became more concentrated. Now, normal economic theory tells us that once a market gets more concentrated, it certainly means that, you know, the consumers will get deeply affected by all of this, that you're going to have, let's say, higher prices, you're going to have lower variety, lower choices. They're going to probably, you know, suffer from low quality of service. All of these are, you know, the natural kind of things that we'd expect to happen. But we somehow don't see that happening in India. As I said, after the kind of higher concentration of market power, we are seeing a lowering of prices throughout. So what's really happening there? Let's unpack it and let's actually look at what is the impact of all of this on the consumer? So, Shruti, what is your take on all of this?
Right. So, there's one kind of overwhelming statistic that India has by far the cheapest mobile data in the world. 1 GB here costs 18 rupees. On average, globally, it's 600 rupees. And before we say this is just, you know, a question of our relative purchasing power, some of the highest data costs are in Africa. And if you say this is a question of scale, in China, it's 700 rupees for a GB. So the first thing I'm saying is it's definitely not inevitable that we have these prices. And it's this history, as sordid as it might be, the direct result has been these great prices for consumers.
And Shruti, just to put that in context, because we need to put that in context as well, not to cut you short, sorry, but lower data costs and lower cellular prices, which I think you might speak about next, it has a very, you know, big kind of positive effect on the Indian consumer. I mean, we are a population of 1.3 billion. Better connectivity has already unlocked a lot of economic opportunities for a lot of people, right? It has very direct consequences on poverty alleviation, on improved kind of, you know, inequality status, and just better opportunities for a lot of people, even if it means even better, you know, entertainment for a lot of people. And entertainment has a high positive value on the quality of life. So if all of this sordid story that Kaushal has been telling us actually has resulted in improved quality of life for a large number of Indians, then what is it we are worrying about? Is that, you know, one point that we can take away from this, right?
Right. And I mean, right. So the kind of three massive industries, as far as I understand, that have emerged from this are payments, e-commerce, and social media and entertainment. And if you remember in 2015, this was when Facebook was trying to bring their free basics. And then they were shut down due to net neutrality. But they were running a campaign that was saying something to the effect of, aren't you guys ashamed of yourself because of your abstract, you know, moral judgment on this? You're denying 1 billion people internet. And the implication was there's no way a market solution would be able to get people internet. Now we have 1.1 billion people connected. So right. It's just the scale of what has been able to be accomplished was beyond, I think, the imaginings of what anyone thought would happen in 2015. So in addition to the data, Jio has also come out with this Jio phone, which allows people without smartphones to access data. For 700 rupees, you can buy a feature phone that accesses 4G. And now none of their plans even come without data. So they sold 70 million Jio phones in 2 years. So the this is an insane scale. And yeah, and so, and also just to give some sort of context of what we would expect with market capture. Now in 2020, for the first time, they've raised prices. Airtel and Jio and Vodafone have raised prices about 30%. So you have a lot of these hysterical articles which say, oh, it's finally here, you know, the oligopoly effect. But just to set context, if you compare to what prices were 10 years ago, when you have a tenfold increase, a 30% increase subsequently is nothing, because now prices are only 87% cheaper than before compared to 90% cheaper than before. Yeah. And so for us to get back to the situation where we were, this is why I don't feel in the medium term that worried about monopoly power abuse, because Jio and Airtel and the others have obviously bet big on low-income customers. So there's a pretty low ceiling of how high they can raise prices. Even if they raise prices 100%, it's still going to be a lot better than what we had.
Hey, that's an extremely interesting take. And of course, if you look at competition law, and by and large, the approach towards competition law that we take either in India or the US, etc., market concentration by itself never it doesn't mean that consumer harm will follow. Even monopoly or dominance, forget about monopoly, but dominance in the market doesn't mean that it is necessarily bad for the consumer. What we clearly say is the abuse of dominance is going to be bad, right? So as of now, I think as Shruti, you point out, there seems to be no clear indication of abuse of dominance. In some ways, yes, they've lowered prices. People are talking about predatory prices, etc., which all means that, you know, it can come about in the future. And I think, Kaushal, you have this kind of sense of slight, I mean, it's not really big, but at least a slight sense of doom that not everything is hunky-dory, right? Yes, it has, you know, given a lot of benefits, but there are also, you say, it comes at, with some kind of costs. What is your apprehension?
So although we have low prices, there's significant price distortion. So we agree on that. We are not being charged what we ought to be charged. Actually, I'm saying, why are we not charging anymore, right? Because, I mean, Indian spectrum is one of the costliest in the world. It's almost on par with USA, right? And so when telecom companies are buying that spectrum and investing in infrastructure, how are they able to, in the long run, foresee a future where they will sustain themselves? So I want to talk about the present health of the sector. In March 2018, they had a debt of 5 lakh crores. Now, in the last 2 years, they have added about 2 lakh more crores to it, and the present debt, at least in 2019, of the sector was 7 lakh crores, and the revenue is 1 lakh 80 crores. So it's hardly enough money to even service the debt, right? Forget paying it off, right? So in fact, what the government has done, they've given a 2 years moratorium on spectrum payment of about 42,000 crores to these three companies, and they have increased the number of installments to 18 from 16. So for the next 2 years, these companies are allowed to not pay anything for the spectrum. Overall loss to the society.
Right. So that's interesting. So I mean, of course, we are not, nobody is denying the benefits to the consumers, but you're saying this is just completely unsustainable. And if you have a situation where, let's say, one of them goes bust, or refuses, you know, or is just unable to service its debt because the revenue is nowhere even close to, you know, being sustainable, then you would have a real problem, right? You would have a higher concentration. The winner is going to just go, you know, completely gobble up the one that's unable to pay. But then you're also going to, you're thinking about a banking crisis. I mean, as it is, we know that banks are overexposed. By the way, I think that's one of the other things. Banks are already overexposed to Vodafone and Idea and Airtel and so on. So, you know, then you'll have a big, massive banking crisis on your hand that will result in, you know, NPAs, all of that, right? So that itself is not sustainable, correct, Kaushal?
Yes, that's the financial health of the sector. And I think you have really hit the nail where it ought to. Also, but I want to look at the consumer services side, okay? To be able, for Jio to be able to maintain the same level of service to as it was in 2017, they need to make about 20 to 30% more capital expenditure. So this is just to maintain the level of service, not the level of service they will have to maintain if they have new subscribers. Whereas if you look at the companies that are providing infrastructure to this telecom industries, the CapEx has actually dropped from 1 lakh crores to about 65,000 crores. And they are expecting a 40% decrease in revenue in just 1 year. So given that the telecom companies are not going to invest in infrastructure in the next few years, how are they going to be able to maintain the kind of traffic that they have on mobile, especially now during the lockdown?
That again brings down to a very interesting thing. But hopefully, if people are using more of the service, you're at least increasing the Q, if not the P. And then with slight increases in, you know, the price as well, as Shruti was talking about, it begins to at least become a little bit sustainable. And we don't want to worsen from the situation. At least one thing I get from both of you is that, you know, we don't want to go any worse from the situation. I mean, we don't see, because again, it's a capital intensive industry and so on, I don't miraculously see a lot of entry of new people, at least in the short term, which means that at least it should not worsen with a few more people exiting the market. And I think Vodafone Idea was very close to getting to that stage where it was no longer sustainable for them. So without, you know, some kind of interventions at the right time, you would have seen probably a worsening of the situation. So just final thoughts before we kind of conclude this entire thing. Shruti, just final thoughts?
Yeah, I think my final thoughts are to go back to where we began and how this crisis has been, this industry has been one of the few to be the winners of this crisis, is also to see it's not just been the industry, right? We, society and state capacity to act have both been improved because of the connectivity that's available to us today. So we've been able to do stuff like cash transfer, contactless payments, private aid, the mobile ticketing. And so there's been a whole set of options available to us for dealing with this crisis as society and from the government perspective that wouldn't have been available without this degree of connectivity. So this is just an example of the very real stakes of this debate and the importance, I think, of having a really connected society.
All right, that's brilliant. Thank you, Shruti. Thank you so much, Kaushal, as well, for joining us. This has already been quite a long episode. So I think just the final thoughts is that all of us recognize the importance of the industry and how massively beneficial it's been. However it got us here, right now we are enjoying this golden phase of, you know, extremely low prices. But we also recognize that it's not sustainable in the long run. So we probably will have to see some kind of increase in prices. Despite, and even if that happens, it'll still be lower probably than anywhere else in the world. So in that sense, we are beneficial on that account. So thank you so much for joining in. Thank you everyone for listening. Join us again for the next episode.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.